and welcome to episode 82 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. My name is Erin Campbell. My guest tonight is one of my favorite writers from the Hipsters of the Coast blog. She is here to talk about herself and her work, Monique Girard. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
For my listeners who don't know, Monique was actually supposed to be my guest for episode 81, and we had some technical difficulties with the program that I used to record called CallGraph. And basically what happened was, I'm going to go on a podcast rant here, so apologize if I bore anybody in advance, but basically when you record a podcast, it can record in either split, which is where each person has their own audio row in Audacity when you go to edit it, or it records in mono, where you only have one strip. So like, let's say, Monique, you were softer than I was, and I wanted to turn up your volume. With split, I would just highlight your bar and crank you up. I wouldn't have to do anything that would affect me. If it's mono, however, and I were to turn up the volume, we would both be affected. And CallGraph didn't seem to have a way to, like, set that. So, like, some episodes it would record in split, some episodes it would record in mono, and it was totally random. And as luck would happen, our episode recorded in mono, which wouldn't be that bad, except it also lumped our voices together. So it was like we were talking over each other. And if the podcast had recorded a split, I could have simply pushed our bars back or, like, made them align like a real conversation. And I wasn't able to do that, so the episode was basically shot.
Oh, man, that was such an awesome episode, too.
Well, we can recreate the magic. I think we've got the power.
I agree, definitely.
Yeah, so thank you for being understanding and for being gracious enough to come back.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me back again.
Absolutely. So as I've said before, I'm a big fan of Hipsters of the Coast, and one of the things I really enjoy about the blog is the fact that they're not necessarily under the umbrella of a really big website. When I first came back to Magic, I had a history of being a blogger from my World of Warcraft days, and I was really surprised by how hard it seemed it was to break into blogging, you know, as a Magic player, if you weren't under a big site. You know, I feel like World of Warcraft has so many more resources for the new blogger. So I'm always really happy when I see a blog that's not under Star City or not under TCG Player do their own thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I love that Hipsters does that.
We got really lucky because the founder of the website, Zach Clark, would write little articles by himself. And eventually it just grew into this huge community when he took on people like Matt Jones, and we have two other editors, Hunter and Dave McCoy, who just really made the blog what it is today. Just this really tight-knit community of players who are just talking about whatever they feel like talking about, you know? So it's awesome.
Now, I do have to ask the obvious question. Are you, in fact, a hipster?
I always say no. I don't think that I'm a hipster. I live very close to Williamsburg, Brooklyn, so I'm immersed in hipster. My local game store is actually in Williamsburg, so I'm immersed in hipster culture, and I just don't feel like I identify. You know, I identify with Magic players and other gamers or science geeks, but I don't feel like I'm a hipster.
Well, you do know that one of the keys or the clues to being a hipster is that you don't identify as a hipster.
Maybe I'm a hipster in denial.
Hey, this is my show. You know, we lay it all bare here. So if you want to confess, if you want to come out as a hipster, I'm totally fine with that.
I am not a hipster.
Okay. She said it's definitive.
Yes.
We won't ask again. So how did you get started with the folks at Hipsters of the Coast?
Just one of the editors reached out to me and asked if I was interested because he knew that I was pretty new to the game. I haven't been playing Magic that long. I started in Innistrad, which was about 2.5-3 years ago at this point. And he reached out to me and asked if I was interested in writing my perspective because he knew I was a competitive player and a new competitive player, and it was just a new, fresh perspective that the blog didn't currently have. And so I said yes. I was really nervous about it at first, but once I got started, I just found that the words flowed as I was writing. So,
now, how did he know you? Did he know you through, like, the local scene?
Yes, we go to the same local game store. So, yeah, we all know each other. Most of us met through there, but there are a few of the writers who live out of state, but most of us are from Brooklyn and all go to the same local game store and all hang with the same crowd. We're a pretty tight group.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this a local game store that you wrote about in your article, The Impact of a Local Game Store?
Yes, yes, 20-sided store in Brooklyn. It's where I got my start. I moved to Brooklyn from Long Island, New York, and I was looking for something to do, and I went online, and, you know, I was, you know, just not fresh out of college, but not... I still didn't have a steady income yet, and I was trying to figure out the best way to spend my free time without spending that much money. And so I found board game nights at a local game store. And being from Long Island, I didn't really explore the gaming scene on Long Island at all. I spent most of my time just at home in front of my computer. I didn't go out to local game stores. And so I found this really cool place where you could just go and play games with like-minded people, and I thought it was awesome. And so in the back of the store, there were like a few guys playing this card game, and it looked really intense, and they were really into it. And I was like, ooh, what's that? And they were like, this is called Magic the Gathering. And then so Luis, the owner of 20-Sided, ended up teaching me along with a few other regulars, and I was hooked ever since.
Mm-hmm. And now, you mentioned how important your local game store is to you, and you had asked people to send in stories of what it means to them. One of the things I always worry about with the way that technology is going now and the increase of online stores is I worry that we're losing that we're losing the local game store, you know, that place to make memories and learn new games. When you were researching that article, do you feel like that's the case too, or do you feel like we still have a lot of stores and like that's not going to happen anytime soon?
At my particular local game store, I find that more and more people who come to play are Modo players or play duels of the Planeswalkers and wanted that human interaction. Like just being able to be social and playing the game that you love is I find it to be very important. And I think local game stores are exactly what you need in order to accomplish that. So people may be straying away from the game stores, but in my particular case, I find the community growing on a weekly basis. So yeah, I definitely think that it's something that people are seeking rather than shying away from nowadays.
Mm-hmm. I always take for granted how awesome my game stores are. I actually have 3 or 4 in the area that I can go to, and they're all fabulous. And I know. But one thing I'm always really surprised about is, like I said, I always hear these horror stories. And I think there was even an article on your site where I don't think you wrote it, but somebody went to a PTQ, and there were these horrible pictures of like leaking ceilings and pipes exposed, and the heat wasn't working. And I've never seen anything like that. You know, I've always been really fortunate where the stores here have clean bathrooms, and we have, you know, female staff, and kids are welcome. And I just, you know, I hear these horror stories, and I can't relate because I've got it so good where I am. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to make of it when people don't have that experience, you know?
There are a few game stores in the New York City area, and some of them are cleaner and more welcoming than others. But I also feel like they all lend a unique characteristic about them that attracts a certain type of person, you know? Mm-hmm. Not everyone wants to. Some people like the grungy, laid-back game stores that they grew up with, and other people want the very clean environment that's very family-friendly. So it really just depends on the personality of a person, I think. But I think that the game store that I chose fit me to a T, which is why I met so many friends through that game store. A lot of my closest friends are from my local game store, so it's a great experience.
Yeah, I also like it when game stores get along. It always makes me really sad when I see game stores engage in these rivalries with each other, where we had 2 stores here, and I'll call them out because that's what I do. there was a store called Pink Bunny, and then there was a store called Anime Fan Zone, I believe. And I like both of them. I have nothing wrong with them. But for a while, there was this weird, like, you know, the owners of one store would, like, make constant comments about another and try to, like, talk about their prize support and how they're selling their cards. And, you know, if they found out that, like, players were going to the other store, there was this weirdness, and I've even encountered that, you know, not necessarily with those stores, but I've said it before, you sometimes feel like a cheating lover, where it's like, you know, you let one game store owner know that you went to the other store, and they're like, well, what do they have that we don't? Like, what did you do there? Did you like it? And it's like, yes, I'm sorry. You just, you feel like a hussy afterwards. And I don't know why there is room for everybody. And I like when they realize that and they don't pressure you into that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there is room for everyone. Like I mentioned before, each game store is so different, but luckily I don't experience that in my area. I don't really like the cattiness or high school drama when I'm trying to relax after a long work week at my local game store, you know? So if I did encounter something like that, I would be very turned off by it. I wouldn't want to stay. I would probably never go to that game store again if I heard the owner, out of all people, the owner is supposed to be the role model of the store. And I don't want to hear the owner gossiping. That would be a huge turnoff for me. Mm-hmm. I had enough of that in high school and college, you know.
Mm-hmm. I also get worried when I see these stories of, like, you know, specifically from the finance side of things, you see owners who react to criticism very poorly. Or, like, let's say somebody's cards didn't come in the right condition or their order was botched and they handle it really well. And I've seen so many cases of, like, Facebook posts where the owners fly off the handle or they'll go on Reddit and chew out the customer. And it's just crazy to me how these people, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's just crazy how some of these people handle their business.
No, I've never seen that. I wonder if those businesses are still around.
I don't know, but it is a little worrisome. Like, it does make you wonder who's really, you know, who's really running these stores and if they even have what it takes.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. So in your bio, it says that you are a biotech research analyst.
Yes, I'm a huge science geek. I've been a science geek my entire life. And I currently work for a startup biotech company based out of Brooklyn. We're actually doing some pretty cool work with immunotherapeutic cancer treatment. So hopefully we'll have something on the market pretty soon. We're in the midst of FDA approvals. So spent a lot of time in my lab coat and behind those goggles trying to make a difference in this world.
Fantastic. So break it down for me. What do you do, like, on a daily basis? Like, what's your average workday like?
At my job. Okay. So I actually have two jobs, but this is my main job. This is my heart.
What's the other job?
Yeah. Well, my other job, I'm a chess teacher for children. So,
wow.
Yeah. But we'll get into that. So I love my job. There's not too many people that could say that they love their job, but I am one of those people who could really proclaim my love for my job. So a typical work day for me, I would walk into work and I would start up any pieces of equipment. There are tons of pieces of equipment in my lab. So, you know, something like a cell counter, a flow cytometer, I would need to start that up because there's a laser inside the machine that needs to warm up for about 15 minutes before I could use it. So I would start up whatever I'm using for the day, run any calibrations or daily checks, and then I would take any samples out that I need to test and run assays and experiments all day. So it's actually a lot of fun. Sometimes I feel like a kid there, like a kid just living out their fantasies, running wild science experiments all day. So we just got this really cool robot in that does the testing for you. Like you just put a little pipette adapter on it and you tell it what to do and it does it for you. And so right now we're working, that's my pet project right now, working on it, trying to optimize it. So.
Wow.
It's a lot
of fun. Do you ever do that thing that you see in science class where somebody's, like, mixing a flask and, like, blows up in their face and their hair sticks up? And...
No.
Darn.
And maybe in college I had something, or I witnessed something like that happen when someone mixed the wrong ingredients together. But, yeah, my lab, everything we use is pretty inert, so I don't have to worry about things blowing up in my face. But I did get splashed with liquid nitrogen once. So a liquid nitrogen tank, and I put their little like racks that we put inside, and I dropped the rack a little bit too quickly, and the liquid nitrogen splashed up, and a tiny little dot touched my skin and left a little pockmark for a few weeks. But
wow. Yeah. Now, nitrogen is the thing that makes you cold. Is that what that is?
Yeah. Okay. It's extremely cold. Upwards of, you know, negative 170, negative 200 degrees Celsius, so...
Okay. I think I remember that from an X-Files episode.
You know, I never watched X-Files. Everyone thinks I'm crazy.
What?
I've never seen X-Files. I've never seen Star Trek. Don't judge me.
Monique Samantha Gerard, how do you sleep at night?
I don't know. I didn't watch Star Wars until I was well into my 20s.
Yeah, I'm also that girl, too. Like, I know I've never seen, like, I'd never seen The Goonies before. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen The Princess Bride. And I used to get all these horrified looks from people, too. And then when I did see them, I didn't really understand what the fuss was about. but The X-Files, especially... Right, but I think, you know, seeing The Goonies when you're 28 doesn't really have the same impact as when you're, you know, a kid or a teen or whatever. But, you know, if you're any sort of science nerd, X-Files is definitely the bee's knees.
I am Netflixing it the moment we get off.
Just saying. But because you are into science, though, I don't know if you're really critical. Like, you may watch the show and be like, that's factually inaccurate, and then you won't enjoy the show.
If I'm watching it to be entertained, I just allow myself to be entertained. I try to just turn off that part of my brain and save it for work when it's important to have it on, you know?
Okay, just making sure. Yeah. I don't want you to, you know, get back to me and be like, you know, that wasn't true or that can't happen, and then you're mad at me for that. So, now you mentioned in one of your articles that you've always identified as a gamer, and from what I understand, you had like a chronology of the games you played throughout your life, and there was quite a list. Mm-hmm. So, what is it that you get from gaming, or that you look to get from these games that you go to?
It's hard to put into words, actually, now that I think about it. It's that feeling that I get. I remember being a little girl and being at school and having a rough day and thinking about whatever current game I was playing, you know, whether it be Zelda or Contra or, you know, Sims or whatever, and just getting very excited by the idea of going home, sitting in front of my TV, Indian style, and booting up that game, or in front of my computer, depending on the time frame. But it's just a butterfly in my stomach that I always got, almost like an escape, you know? So games are really important to me because there's never been a time in my life where I didn't have a game that I could, you know, go to for, I guess, comfort in a way.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine your life without a game?
No.
No.
No. I didn't even need to think about that. No, I could see myself being 88 years old and playing chess with my husband.
So. Is it important that the people you date are also gamers too?
It's not important that they are gamers. Actually, my boyfriend now does play a lot of games. We spend a lot of time playing board games at home, or even Magic. He plays Magic as well. But it's they have to understand. Why they have to understand that it's important to me. I can't date a person who looks at gaming as a juvenile pastime and doesn't understand why I do it and tries to convince me not to. That just won't fly. I don't think we would be together very long.
Yeah, I definitely think that's key too. Like, I remember when I played World of Warcraft and we would always hear these horror stories, and I remember people would quit the game for their partners. Mm-hmm. And we always, you know, those of us in the guild, whenever we would see that goodbye post, we were like, you'll be back. Like, you know, this is a terrible reason to quit for somebody, you know, and like you said, it's about them understanding, you know, somebody who's geeky, they're going to get it. They're, you know, somebody who's not, you know, they are going to be like, why are you ignoring me? You know, why are you, it's so not about that. And, you know, somebody who games is also going to understand why you are gaming 3 days a week, or why you are going, you know, 300 miles to drive to an event. They're going to get it. Yeah. Whereas somebody who doesn't is going to worry about it. They're going to see it as a threat, and exactly. They don't need to.
Exactly. So, that's it's very important. I hear all the time of stories of, like, some of my Magic buddies who have girlfriends or boyfriends who get upset at them for going to tournaments and things like that. And I kudos to them for putting up with that, but I know myself, I wouldn't be able to do that just because it's so important to me. You know, just having that escape. You know, I work all the time. I want to be able to have my two nights a week to play Magic and really enjoy it without having the stress of my partner not understanding or not accepting it. So. Mm-hmm.
I actually knew that was one of the reasons why my last relationship was sort of, you know, over with, or that it had run its course, was because I started to really resent the time that I was spending with my boyfriend when I wasn't playing Magic. Like, I remember, you know, he lived in Chicago at the time, so we only had weekends together. And unfortunately, a lot of the really good Magic events happen on weekends. And, you know, there were times where a pre-release weekend would happen, and I would go to, like, and I like to go to every day. I like to do a Saturday pre-release, maybe two events on a Saturday, and then the Sunday. And I remember, you know, I'd only be able to do one. Mm-hmm. And then we would do stuff, And I would just have that attitude of, I could be pre-releasing right now. Like, everything we did just didn't compare to that. And I started to really resent him for that. And that's how I knew we really weren't in a good spot. Because for a while, it was something I was happy to sort of give up. Or it was something I was happy to scale back. But towards the end, I didn't really like it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not fair. Why does it, you know, why am I doing this? I don't really want to be doing this. And that was a big red flag for me.
Mm-hmm.
So shortly after you learned how to play Magic, you decided that you wanted to go the competitive route, that you didn't just want to be a casual.
Yeah.
So what is it about competition that you enjoy?
just the adrenaline rush when you sit in front of your first opponent at a long tournament, and you know it's going to be a long day, and you have to be on your A game the entire day, and just that challenge is amazing. I actually went to my first – so I started playing – I learned to play Magic like a few days after I saw these guys playing it at my local game store. Maybe a week later, I do my first draft at the FNM. And less than a month later, I'm at my first PTQ. So I really went down the competitive – I pretty much started on the competitive route and haven't looked back. I'm a very competitive player. In high school, I played Spades, the card game, competitively. You know, I went to tournaments with my partner, just little local events that they did. I also played StarCraft a little bit, but not really that competitively. I just played in a local group, a club in my high school. But whenever there's a competition, there's this fire in me that just lights up, and I get really excited, and I have to do my best. Like, for instance, I was just at my best friend's house last night, and I was playing Mortal Kombat with her fiance. Now,
yes.
I am not a fighting game person. I don't know what I'm doing. But the first thing I did was press pause and say, sorry, I have to go through the moves list. And went through the moves list. I learned like a few key combos, and then like just went to town. And he was just like, wow, I can't believe you've never played this game before. And I was like, I'm serious about my games. Don't mess with me.
I used to love fighting games growing up. I remember one of the first games I can remember ever playing was Street Fighter II. And I was that kid where I would memorize the moves. I would read that rule book front and back, and I would, my friends call me the sponge because I have a habit of just soaking up knowledge and books and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I was the kid where other kids would come over to play with me, and I could just rattle off the moves. And they were like, you know, they would be the ones that would just be randomly thumbing the joystick and just hitting all the buttons, hoping to God a move happens. And I was the one that would have the controls, you know, down, upper, left, A, Hadouken, you know, whatever. I was very controlled about it.
Yeah.
And I used to love Mortal Kombat, and I knew all the fatalities and the fatalities.
Cool.
And I love fighting games. Always loved them.
That was cool. Man, this fighting game last night was so gruesome, though. Like, they were cutting each other in half, and, like, they would just go cut to the slow motion scene where, like, you see their skull and their innards. I was pretty impressed. It was exciting.
That was the best part. Like, and it's funny because my mom used to watch me play Mortal Kombat. Like, I remember when the Mortal Kombat games first came out, and, you know, some parents were really upset about it because it was the most gruesome game at the time. There was nothing like it, you know? And I remember, you know, while other parents were freaking out about it, my mom would have a cigarette and watch for hours. And she thought it was so cool. And she, you know, she'd ask me what I was doing, and she'd cheer me on. And I can remember being Katana and kissing somebody and watching them explode. Or I can remember being, you know, Melina and peeling off my face and eating them up and spitting their bones. I thought it was awesome. And
that's always awesome.
Yeah. I've always had a great appreciation for fighting games. So so how far would you like to take things? So, like, are you looking to maybe win an Open? Are you looking to get on the Pro Tour? Like, where do you see yourself going competitively?
Right now, Magic is very important to me. I play very often, and I invest a lot of time in getting better. I went to a PTQ. I go to a lot of PTQs. I don't really think about winning when I go, but I do think about playing my best. And I think with that mentality, eventually I will make it onto the Pro Tour as long as I keep trying my best and play my best and keep learning. You know, I don't think there are limits to learning. As long as you put your all into it, you're going to go somewhere. So it's not necessarily a goal of mine, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened given my dedication to the game.
Is that something you think you're ready for? Like, if you were to, you know, make your way into that, you know, the hours of practice that goes into it and everything else, like, do you think you're cut out for that?
Yes, most definitely. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I spend a lot of time preparing for big events. If there's a Grand Prix coming up, I do spend a lot of time testing. We have a team draft league that meets every week, and so we play a fair amount inside of our local game store as well as outside. I'm on a bunch of listservs, and we talk about, you know, different cards that came out or different combos that we didn't think about. So I really breathe Magic right now. So yeah, I would definitely be prepared. As far as it taking up, becoming my life, becoming my career, no, I don't think that I would be able to go that far into it. But, mm-hmm. you know, playing in a pro tour or doing well at events or prepping for events, yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Will you be at GP Philly next week?
I will not be at GP Philly.
Jeez. I was so excited because I was like, well, Philly can't be that far from Brooklyn. Maybe she'll be there and I can give her a big hug. And
it's not far at all. I'm actually going to be going to PAX East. I'm also really into conventions. I try to go to as many Comic-Cons and gaming conventions as I can every year. So it's about time to satisfy that itch. So I'm going to be going to PAX East with a buddy of mine this year.
I see how it is, Monique.
Yeah, I know.
I actually was supposed to go to, well, I had made the plans to go to GP Philly well in advance. My very good friend Jen lives out there, and I have other friends out there as well. So this had been in the cards 6 months ago, at least. And my very good friend Tifa Mayan, who, you know, runs the Lady Planeswalker Society, she was thinking of starting a panel on women in gaming at PAX, and she'd asked me to be on it, which was a huge honor. And we submitted the panel very close to the deadline, so she didn't think it was going to get approved, but she figured, why not? And if the panel had been approved, I would have gone to the GP, you know, derailed for a day, gone to PAX, and then done both. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. So I was like, well, just go to GP Philly then. So, but she will be at PAX. So if you're a fan of panels, you should definitely go to the Ladies and Feminism panel. It's going to be awesome.
Okay, yeah, definitely. I definitely go to panels. I wait on lines. I experience the whole con, or I do the whole con experience. I'll keep that in mind. I'll put that in my schedule for the weekend.
Fantastic. So I want to hear about your first couple experiences dabbling in competitive Magic, not only as a new player, but also as a woman. Like, what were those times like?
You know, I always tell people that I wasn't treated any differently being a woman playing the game. But if I really think back at it, I feel like I may have been treated very kindly because when I first started playing competitively, now things are a little bit different. It's amazing how things have changed so much in just 3 years. But when I first started going to PTQs, I was usually the only female there. And if there were other people, like out of 200 people, there are maybe two women. So maybe three max, but now there's a handful of them. And so whenever I sat down in front of an opponent, especially since I was new, they would be patient with me. And, you know, maybe it was because I was a woman, or maybe it's because I was lucky to get paired against really nice people. But I didn't really have many horror stories going to big events. No one really treated me poorly. But I do have a story about the PTQ I just went to last weekend.
Fire away.
Round one, I get paired up against a woman. And I'm excited. I've never played. I played Jackie Lee in one TCG player tournament, maybe like 2 years ago. But
how did that go?
Other than she beat me on turn five of the game. It was an epic game. Like, me and her have been cordial to each other ever since. I actually just saw her this weekend. Like, she's a very kind lady. And it was just, like, so great. But I had no idea who she was because I'm new to the game. And, like, everyone's just like, do you know who you were just playing? And I was like, no. But the only other girl in the tournament? Are you guys making a big deal out of that? And they're like, no, she's a pro player. And I was, it made me feel even happier about just having such a great match. But this weekend, I played against this woman. And I sit down and I'm like, I say something along the lines of, oh, man, the chances of us getting paired together are pretty slim, given that there aren't too many women at this tournament. And she kind of, like, grunts a little bit, but, you know, doesn't really acknowledge it. And so we play a game, and, Aaron, I roll her. Like, she did not have a fighting chance. My deck was very consistent. It was extremely aggressive. She was playing a three-color dirtily deck and just wasn't drawing what she needed, or maybe didn't keep ideal hands against me. And at the end of the game, like, I say good luck with the rest of the match, and she completely ignores me. And I couldn't believe it. Here I am, excited that I'm playing against another woman and that there's another woman in the competitive realm of Magic. And she doesn't even acknowledge me, like, doesn't say good games, doesn't say anything, just, like, ignores me, just, like, turns her nose up at me. And so that was not a good experience. It just sent, like, I kind of tilted a little bit. But luckily, we had gone to the PTQ. We rented a bus. So there was, like, 13 of us from my local game store who piled into this bus and drove to the PTQ. So I had a lot of support around me, and they really got me through it. So I ended up finishing, that was my best PTQ performance to date. I ended up finishing 18th, went 6-2, just one match away from top eighting. It was an awesome experience. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm curious about is you had mentioned that it was a pretty small distance between you just starting to play Magic and, like you said, you just jumped into competitive Magic. So were you nervous at all going from just FNMs to, bam, PTQs?
No. But I don't think I ever felt nervous, just because when I start liking a game, I get kind of obsessed with it. So even though I was only a month into the game, I knew every single card in that format. It's funny. I was actually playing against a guy named Tom. I would never forget it. It was round four of my first PTQ. And we're playing, and I tell him I'm very new. This is my first PTQ. I haven't even been playing a month. And he's like, oh, don't worry. You can read all my cards. And so it was game two, and he had like a he made a really strange attack, and I had a big creature, and I wanted to block it. And then I said to myself, Spidery Grass? Because I looked at his mana, and I figured that's the only instant that could have saved his creature. And so I said, no blocks. And then he was just like, wow. He was so floored by the fact that I knew the cards, I knew the format, and I was already playing like a competitive player. So, yeah, I've had it in me since the beginning, which is why I continue. Mm-hmm.
I had a difficult time getting into the competitive scene because I got very spoiled playing World of Warcraft. And what I mean by that is things in WoW were very much based around a tier system. So, like, let's say I was a raider. I was a very serious raider. And there were steps that you would take to raiding, and it was very seamless. So, first off, you would max level your character. And then you would run your five mans, and you would get the gear that you needed. And then eventually you would have a gear level or an eye level where you could run heroics, five-man heroics. And then you would get the gear from the five-man heroics that you needed, and you would farm. And each of these things were like checks and balances. So, like, let's say you weren't able to heal a heroic on your own. It's like, okay, maybe I need better gear. You go back to the previous step and get some better gear from your five-mans and then try it again. And, you know, and then it would go from, okay, then you do your five-mans to your ten-mans to your ten-man heroic. And, you know, I tried applying that to Magic, and I couldn't. So I was like, okay, so I'm at FNM. I started doing well at FNM, and then I was like, all right, well, I'll go to my local events then. So I'd go to, like, an eight-person win a box on the weekend or whatever. I started winning those, and then I was like, okay, you know, I'm doing really well. What's the next step? And then people were like, PTQs! And I'm like, okay, so I go from a little eight-person event where there's not really much on the line to an event with, like, 300, 400 people. Holy shit. And it was very much culture shock to me. And I didn't feel like there was really an adequate bridge from FNM to that. And I was very jarring for me the first couple times. I was very overwhelmed. I didn't feel like I had learned a lot of the lessons that you should learn, like how to lose, you know, what a good record is. Even little things like, you know, I used to just cut people's decks. And it's like, no, you have to pick it up and mess, you know, shuffle that deck, you know? And those little things I didn't feel like I was prepared for, and that really threw me off. So, yeah. So you wrote an article asking people what they think when another woman or a woman sits across from them in Magic. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you didn't necessarily answer yourself.
That was on purpose. What...
It was all meant to have you come on the show and answer the question. So Monique, what do you think, or what goes through your mind when a woman sits across the table from you?
Oh, my goodness. I have to say it.
You do, honey. This is
okay,
my show.
I'm gonna be
okay.
Okay. When a woman sits across the table from me, well, this is going to be Monique from maybe
6 months ago, because my mentality has changed a lot recently. But 6 months ago, I would think to myself, oh my goodness, I have to beat her. I have to be the best woman at this tournament. I don't want to be stuck in the back tables. I have to win because I don't want to be stereotyped as a bad girl player. And then because I had that mentality of win, 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 I always lost. Like, it's like, it is just terrible. Well, I played against, I mean, other than Jackie, I think I played against maybe one other woman, but I can't remember exactly. But I just have this thought to myself where I have to win. But now it's changed. Like you mentioned before, like, learning how to lose is very important, but also learning how to not focus on winning is important too. So as soon as I changed my focus to playing the game rather than winning the game, my play increased tremendously. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
That's something I have to learn. And I know my last guest suggested that too, Mark Nestico. He said the same thing. And I think that's my problem, is I go into the event so driven and so hungry. And then when I do, let's say I don't meet that goal, it's so devastating to me. And I really need to, you know, figure out that balance of wanting to play because you want to play and then wanting to win. Mm-hmm. I still feel like the scales are tipped wrong for me.
I think it's okay to want to win, but I don't think it's okay to have that be your main focus going into an event or going into a match. You really need to empty your head and focus on the game if you want to win. Like, if you're using all of your energy, like, your brain only could only do so much at once. So if you're worried about winning and losing, you're going to miss things on the battlefield. You're going to miss triggers. You're going to miss important plays or choose the wrong line. Like, you really have to have a clear mind go if you want to do well at a long event, especially when it's a long 8 to 10 round event. Like, by round 8, you're tired, but those are the most critical rounds sometimes. So being alert is important.
Did you ever feel that burden of, you know, let's say you lose, the, oh God, I failed all women feeling? Did you ever have that?
I used to.
Yeah.
I used to. It used to be a fear of mine to be, because I'm the type of person that likes to play until the end of a tournament. Even if I go 0-4 in the beginning, I'm still playing until the last rounds. And I never wanted to be at the last table. And I never wanted to be a woman at the last table because I didn't want anyone looking at me and, like, you know, just thinking, oh, typical girl there. Of course, you know, girls and kids at the last table, who else would be there? So, yeah, I did feel a bit of a burden, but now not so much. Not so much.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most freeing moments I had, was when I realized I don't have to represent all women. You know, I definitely want to be visible, you know, because I do think that's really key to turning things around in the community. But I was really beating myself up there for a while, because not only did I feel like I had to represent, you know, women, I felt like I also had to represent trans women, because I'm trans. And I was like, great. So, you know, it's bad enough that women aren't really represented very well, and my fellow queers aren't really represented well enough, and I'm fucking it up for both of them. And yeah, it really fucked me up for a while. And I really had to let that go and be like, you know, you are not the representative. You are not the token. You know, you've got to do you. And if you can happen to shine some light on these folks, do that. But it's a pretty heavy burden. So,
yeah.
So what are your most, you also wrote another article, which I love. What are your most annoying magic habits? Do you have any bad habits, Monique?
Do I? Okay. When I first started playing, I had a really bad habit of announcing, I was learning the game, but I did this for like a year and a half to 2 years, where I would announce every single phase. So, upkeep, wait for my opponent, draw, wait for my opponent, first main phase, and, like, you know, do something. And, like, my opponent could be all tapped out. I would go to my upkeep, and I would still wait for acknowledgement from my opponent before I drew my card. And oh my goodness, did I send some people on tilts doing that. But I didn't realize what I was doing. It became a habit after a while because I was trying to remember. And so it's just something that I did. But eventually I broke out of it. But people used to complain about that. They would say I'm slow playing or slow rolling them and, you know, whatever. But I don't do that anymore. And it's funny because the longer I play the game, other people's bad habits affect me less too. Like, I used to really hate when people would flick their cards loudly or, you know, just constantly shuffle as I'm trying to think through my play. But now I don't even notice them. I kind of get into this zone where nothing really affects me. And it used to also make me very nervous when people would stand behind me and watch me play. But now it doesn't make me nervous at all. I welcome it because I want their constructive criticism at the end. As soon as the match is over, I ask them about like a critical play or a line that I took that I wasn't sure about, and we would discuss it. So, yeah.
That's actually one of the habits that bothers me. I don't like spectators, number one. I get very nervous. I don't like people in my bubble like that. But what makes me even more upset is when the match isn't even over and they're already telling you what you did wrong. So, like, you know, you've determined who the winner is. It may happen to not be you. And seconds go by and they take a seat and they're like, so, here's what you could have done differently. And I'm like, I need a minute. Like, I need to process. I need to de-sideboard, like, can you not? And I've had people get really shitty about it where they're, you know, I've politely said, and then there have been times I've been, I'll admit I haven't handled it very well, and there have been times where I've literally looked somebody in the eye and I've said, I'm not looking for feedback.
And, which is fair. It's your right.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
I think feedback should be given when asked. But
yeah, right.
I think I'm the opposite of you, though. I really enjoy feedback. I think the reason why I increased in levels so quickly was because I asked for feedback all the time. After every single game I played, for the first, even until today, actually, is there anything that you would have done differently? Were there any lines that you questioned? Or, you know, I would ask my opponent, or I would ask any spectators. So, yeah, I'm quite the opposite. And when they offered it, I never looked at it as them criticizing me. I always looked at it as them helping me. So I always appreciated it.
Well, I think it's not that I don't want it, but for me, I think there's such a thing as too soon. And
yeah.
It's literally, I mean, the opponent hasn't even packed up their stuff yet. We're still, you know, ripping off our life pads or whatever, putting our dice away. It's too soon.
Gotcha.
You know, I think once they're gone, once I've got my stuff in my bag, then you can kind of spring it on me, but I just think it's too soon.
Yeah.
That's a really big pet peeve of mine. Something else I don't enjoy, this is a big one, I don't like it when people don't bring their own dice and tokens. That really, really bothers me. Like, if you have to use my dice to beat me, I get a little offended by that. Where it's like, could you be prepared? Like, you know, if you know that you're playing a Thrag Tusk in your deck and there are beast tokens, I'm not saying it has to actually be the beast token, but can you have something that's not a scrap of paper with a stick figure on it? Like, could we do more, please? Like, that really kind of bothers me. And something else I've noticed lately, which I wish I could complain about, but I've been told that I can't. I seem to attract opponents who like to chew tobacco.
Ooh.
And they carry around these bottles with their spittle.
Oh.
And they will lay the bottle on the table. So when I'm looking at their board state, I'm like, Soldier Pantheon, Daring Skycheck, Spittle, like, it's very, it's just hanging out there. And you know, they'll be making plays, and they'll, like, it's kind of like people who think they're really discreet when they're eating sunflower seeds. There's no nice way to eat sunflower seeds. I know you're spitting out the shells. You can't fool me. And it's the same with tobacco. Like, they think they're slickly putting the bottle up. Pass the turn. And I'm like, and I remember asking my judge friends, I was like, can I call a judge because my opponent's revolting? Can I do? They're like, no error. And I'm like, damn. So spittle, not a fan.
Yeah, as you say that, I'm picturing someone knocking the bottle over all into your playmat.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know? Oh, and you're having to, like, you know, you have, like, your muta vault with spittle stains on them. Like, just not okay. Not okay.
No.
Yeah. I know, right?
Burned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to you in terms of the phase calling, though, because I am trigger girl. I announce every day I'm trigger. Mm-hmm. When I play Living End, it's cycle, draw a card. Then it's my draw phase. I will say drawing for turn. Mm-hmm. When I played Splinter Fright, Mill 2, I announce every damn thing. Desecration Demon. People get so mad at me for Desecration Demon, because even when they have no creatures. Combat, would you like to sacrifice a creature? I don't have any. Thanks, swing six. You know, just I cover my butt, you know?
Yeah.
you know, because if you forget, then they've got you. And no, I don't want anyone to think that they have me. So as we say at the office, CYA, cover your ass.
I'm actually really good at my trigger. I and that's all my triggers as well as my opponent's triggers. I'm not really into like winning because my unless it's a game deciding trigger or a competitive REL event, then fine. I'm not really gonna focus too much on the triggers. But if it's a casual event and they're missing, like, you know, in the current set, an inspired trigger or something, I'll point it out to them. Just because I think it's important. I love playing a game where everything is done correctly, and it's just a really dynamic, swingy game where, you know, it makes me feel like I'm a planeswalker on the battlefield when it's like that. So when you're winning because people are forgetting triggers, that's no fun.
I agree with you to a certain extent. I think, like you said, for casual events, that's fine. But I think if we're at an open, you need to handle your shit. Like, that's, I remember I had an opponent at the last Milwaukee Open back in October, and he admitted he was hungover. And he was playing this BAMP mid-range deck, and it had a lot of tricky interactions. And he had, like, Horizon Chimera, and he had, you know, Fathom Mage. And then he had, like, you know, Zagana, just all these things that sort of worked together. And he was constantly missing triggers. And I was just like, it was cute for, like, the first time. But then, like, after the fourth and fifth time, it was like, you need to not play this deck if you're going to be hungover. Like, play red deck wins. Play something you don't have to manage, because this is just embarrassing, and it's not my job to do this. So I get very funny about that. So I have to – one of the things I wanted to ask you about, which I found really funny, is you wrote about one of your greatest fears.
And I did.
It's a very interesting fear, because it's not one that I would think would be terrifying, but apparently to you it is. You're afraid of being in a feature match?
So, yeah, I'm pretty afraid of being on camera. I haven't experienced it, but I did write that article a while ago, so I'm much more confident now. But there's just something really scary about having people watch everything, all of your moves, and comment on it and scrutinize it. And, you know, everyone has their on days and their off days. So what if it's a really off day and every single play that I make is incorrect, and then it's just out there for the whole Magic community to see? So it's just very scary.
I find it interesting, though, because you had said that you were very open to feedback, and you definitely didn't mind spectators. And, I mean, isn't that kind of what being in a feature match opens you up to?
Yeah, but when you have spectators, there are maybe five people max watching your match. But when you're in a feature match, like at an open or something, there are thousands of people watching your match. It's a little bit different. I think that I would be better of it now. I have calmed down a lot more. Like, I remember when I first started playing, if I ever faced off against a known player or someone who I knew was a good player or even a pro player, I would get very nervous and I would defeat myself even before I started playing. But I'm getting much better now, or where I don't worry about that. It's not even on my mind when I sit down in front of a player. Like, I just clear my mind and I play my match. And then afterward, I could gloat about, oh my God, I just played a pro player. I can't believe I won, or something like that.
I have to say, I can relate to being a little bit afraid of feature matches, but for totally the wrong reasons. Like, I always worry. I worry about, like, what I'll look like on camera. Like, are they going to get, like, my good side? Am I going to be wearing the right outfit? Am I going to look fat on camera? Do my nails look okay?
Oh,
like, that's
on.
What I worry about. You know?
You always look fabulous. Get out of here.
It's funny because I was at GP Richmond, and I didn't notice this at the time, but I was watching one of the top eight matches, and I didn't realize that I was too close to the camera. So I'm watching the feature match. I'm, like, tapping a pen on my forehead like an idiot, you know, rocking back and forth on my heels, and all of a sudden my phone blows up. And I get all these ominous messages saying, we see you. And I'm looking around the venue like, what? And then I get a text message from a number I don't recognize saying, I see you. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is like Scream. Oh, God. And then somebody actually sent a screenshot. And they were like, you're on camera. And I'm like, what? Really? Where? And then I realized my dumb ass was standing in front of the camera. So I quickly moved out of the way. But even then, I was like, oh, my God, are those my thighs? Like, what is that? So I'm afraid of feature matches for the totally wrong reason. That, what if my sleeves don't, you know, look good enough? You know, what about that? You know, that's what I think about. You know, what if my tokens look silly? I'm all about appearances, you know?
It's so funny how magic just takes that out of me. Like, I don't know. There's something about this game that makes me forget about everything. And I think that's why I love it. But yeah, it's just, I don't care about what I look like. I don't care about anything except for, and it's funny because I get really fixated too. If you ever play against me, you're going to know when I'm serious because I'll stop talking and my eyes will probably not leave the battlefield and your hands and your library and my hands and my library for the entire 50 minutes. I get really serious. Unless we're shuffling or mulliganing or something, then I'll be lighter. But other than
that, you'll acknowledge that I'm there.
Yes. Yes.
So one thing I do want to ask you about while I have you here, because you're a fellow chick who's competitive, and I can relate to you and things like that. One of the reasons I call my show The Deck Tease is because I am a deck tease. I can never decide what deck to play. And I'm going to an SCG Open this weekend, and I've been playing Dredge for a while, standard Dredge. I love it. It's fun. Whatever. But the deck tease in me is at it again. Reduke came out with a junk mid-range deck the other day, which I love. Mm. I have no experience with it. I have no practice with it, but it looks fun. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide what to play? Like, because I can never decide. What are your tips?
So I haven't played Constructed in a while. I've been playing a lot of Limited lately. But when I did play Constructed, I would just watch my favorite players. Like, Reduke is actually one of my favorite players. I love his play style. I like his deck choices.
And you too.
Yeah. and I would watch I would watch their videos and read all their articles and really just immerse myself in it and play that deck as much as possible. But I usually wouldn't switch out of it. I would play it for the entire season. Maybe make some tweaks here and there, just to make it my own. But I would just learn it. And I think I would just get confident with the deck just because of repetition over some time. It's pretty hard for me to just pick up a deck that I've never played before and perform well with it.
So you would say that you're an advocate of play what you know?
Yes.
Okay. So by that knowledge or by that logic, I should stick with Dredge. I know Dredge.
How's the meta right now? How does it fit into the meta? Is it tier one?
Well, it's top 16, GP Cincinnati.
Okay.
And I think it top eighted at GP Buenos Aires.
And how long ago were these GPs recently?
Cincinnati was last weekend, I want to say, the weekend before. And then Buenos Aires was the weekend before that, I want to say. So within the last 30 days.
Yeah, I would stick with it.
Okay. Because, you know, I'm very easily lured away, where it's like, you know, I see Obsidian and Abrupt Decay, which are awesome cards, and I see that Reduke's playing, I know, and I'm, like I said, I'm such a deck tease, where it's like, that deck looks like so much fun, and then and going back to the lover's metaphor, you know, you're playing the deck that you love, but then you're thinking about that other deck, mm-hmm. and how much fun they are, and how much fun they could be, and then they're not like the other deck, and it's like, oh, I'm cheating on my deck, and
I just have to choose. I find that a lot of people tend to sideboard for the newer decks that are coming out, and they tend to forget about the older ones. And I like just sticking with the same deck because sometimes it's really good because everyone forgot about it, but sometimes it's pretty bad because it's been topping everything and everyone is sideboarding pretty heavily against it. But I wouldn't be the type of person to switch to a new deck because I know that the environment's going to be really poor for it because a lot of people have been reading about it and a lot of people are going to have ways to answer it. So, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely play Dredge. You know it. You're probably going to do very well with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a thought and I just totally lost it. Yeah, that was like the other day. I remember I was playing somebody and he used Crypt Incursion and like ate all my guys. And I was like, who uses Crypt Incursion?
Exactly.
And because Dredge was starting to do well, certain people were like putting one or two cards in their sideboards and that one happened to screw me over. So I was like, well, I guess I'm playing a threat if people are getting ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Totally took me by surprise. So Monique, if people have enjoyed listening to you on the show, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
Okay, I'm a writer for Hipsters of the Coast, www.hipstersofthecoast.com. Come check us out. It's a great website. We talk about everything from casual to competitive play, commander to limited to standard to legacy, old formats, new formats. You know, we highlight older players or even newer players. So whatever you're looking for, you're probably going to find on that website. So my column is called Grinding It Out. I focus on competitive play and just ask a lot of hard-hitting questions to the Magic community as a whole. You could also reach me on Twitter at Monique Gerard, MoniqueGerard. And I will try to tweet more than I usually do. Right now, so it's pretty barren, but hopefully I'll have more time to dedicate to just social media more so cool. than I have been doing. Yeah.
And you also post the schedules for upcoming events in your area and your region, too.
I do, yeah. North, I focus on Northeast, anything 200 miles or less from New York City. As long as it's a competitive REL event, I list it on a chart and it has the store that's doing it, location, date, time, cost, all of that good stuff. So definitely check it out if you're a grinder and you're looking for your next GPT or something of that sort.
Well, very cool. So, well, thank you very much for coming on the show and coming back on the show, Monique. As I said, I'm a big fan of your work. I love the hipsters, and I really do hope I get to meet you sometime and get to know you in person.
Yes, definitely. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. And if anyone else is listening and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the DeckTees, you can always find the show first and foremost on GatheringMagic.com. The show can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Subscribe and leave me a positive review. The show is also on Twitter at the DeckTees. I am on Twitter at Original Estrus, and you can also email me personally at Estrus@ElitistJerks.com. Thank you so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.
Bye.